This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, good to have you with us right here on a Tuesday afternoon. It is just past 2 o'clock as we do the live radio show, Graham. Coming up in 4 hours, you will hear the wonderful tones of spring training and Nationals baseball. And right now we go down to West Palm Beach, and we're joined by one of the voices of the Washington Nationals, the great Charlie Slows. You can hear him and Dave Jagler tonight at 6 o'clock against the Houston Astros right here on the Team 980, Odyssey, and the Nationals Radio Network. Charlie, good afternoon. Thanks for doing this on short notice. Appreciate you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rooster. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Always good to hear your voice on the show and obviously on the game broadcast. So, again, I appreciate you doing this. So let's start with Mackenzie Gore, yesterday's starter and opening day starter, named opening day starter by the Washington Nationals. Certainly not a surprise. I guess it was kind of anticlimactic. I don't know how you kind of view this. How's he looked so far in your eyes, what you've been able to see in spring? And, again, I can't imagine there was really any surprise about this.
No, I think they want him to take the bull by the horns and step up and be a leader, and also by making him the open day starter, getting as many starts as they can. Biggest issues for him, you know, stay away from the 30-pitch innings,
yeah,
which yesterday he had a 31-pitch inning,
yes,
and try and get deeper into ball games. He's, you know, sometimes has bouts with command. They're hoping he turns the corner there. But, you know, if he puts it all together with the type of stuff he has, they're hoping he has a big year. And, you know, now just turning 26 years of age last month, they think it's time.
How do baseball players and success and failure in baseball seems to be cyclical in a lot of cases? Like, he started off great last year, then he hit that really rough patch, then he finished mostly strong. C.J. Abrams, who we'll get to, again, started off great last year. And again, things go in cycles. We all understand, you know, it's professional sports played by human beings. But for McKenzie, you just mentioned the pitch count, the command, the control. What has he done, do you think, this offseason? I heard Davey yesterday with Grant and Danny on the other side say basically he's mentally freed up. He's not killing himself if he makes one mistake. Do you think that's the biggest area of improvement, or is there something else that you can tell?
Well, I think it's a matter of maturity. You know, he pitches with a lot of emotion,
yeah,
and when things weren't going right, he gets very hard on himself, and, you know, it builds over one of those long innings. You know, I used to talk to Max Scherzer about how, you know, McKenzie would get upset if he didn't get a close call that he thought was a strike, and maybe that stayed with him. And Max never really, like, would just go right on. I said, how do you not, you know, let that carry over? How do you? He says, I got to make the next pitch. The next pitch has got to be better than the last,
yeah,
one, and I've got to go right on to the next one and put that out of his mind. And I think, you know, that takes a while for you to get there. You know, we all – mature in life, you talk to your kids and say, hey, you know, if you let something like this bother you now, wait till you have a bigger problem as you know, as life moves along. And that, I think that's just a matter of maturity within game and within life.
You know, it's an interesting point that you bring up with Max, because I don't know if I'm right or wrong on this, but just kind of the mentality thing that you're talking about, some pitchers, it gets you. Like, I'm sure you remember this early on in Steven Strasburg's career. It would seem like if it, not necessarily a bad pitch or a bad mistake, but like a fielding error, whether it was him or somebody else, and it would lead to a bunch of times, a 3 or 4 run inning, and everybody be like, well, it wasn't Strasburg's fault. He you know, the runs were unearned. But as a pitcher, you really do have to buckle down, and maybe even more so in that case. And Max had that bulldog mentality that you're kind of talking about. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe it's more mental than physical.
Yeah, well, it totally is. If you have the ability, you've got to, again, put it out of your mind, try and make the next pitch. I mean,
yeah.
Remember Gio Gonzalez, we all love Gio, but you could see him wear everything on his sleeve.
No,
you know,
right.
Whether it was good or bad, all his emotions showed out there. So, you know, that's if you can succeed that way, great. But most guys, when emotions overtake you, especially when you're on the mound, trying to keep your composure and move on, because you got to make a really good next pitch as time goes on.
Charlie Slows, one of the voices of the Washington Nationals, on the radio all summer and all season long, opening day next week. But tonight, right here on the Team 980, 6 o'clock against the Houston Astros, along with Dave Jagler, you can hear the call of spring training baseball. The rest of the rotation, Charlie, spend a moment on that. Trevor Williams obviously had the great start to last year. Then the injury, they add Soroka. You got Irving, you got Mitchell Parker, and others pushing, TJ Hurst, so on and so forth. What do you think of the depth of the starting rotation?
Well, certainly it's better. There's no doubt. I mean, the injuries last year brought you Parker and Hurst.
Yep.
Where if you're healthy, they're probably may not be in the big leagues at all last year. I mean, Hurst basically made a jump from Double A to the big leagues from where he had been in the past. And, you know, Mitchell Parker probably wasn't on the radar to come up early last year. Josiah Gray goes down. Jackson Rutledge had been hit on the leg. It was Parker's day to pitch. He comes up, has a very good first 5 innings, and gets a win against the Dodgers in Los Angeles.
I remember.
And he's in the rotation the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And I think he has, in my view, it's just my view, I think he has a leg up right now on both Hers and Ogasawara, the Japanese pitcher that the Nationals signed in the offseason.
I forgot to mention him as well. So, I mean, they could have 7-ish options, which, as you mentioned, injuries, depth, versus, you know, all sorts of different things could go on. I think this bullpen is better. I mean, obviously, Finnegan coming back after the, you know, the non-tender, and then the exploration of free agency didn't exactly go his way. But they add Jorge Lopez. Ferrer looks like a good young potential closer from the left side with electric stuff. If he settles down, they add Derek. They add Lucas Sims, Law, maybe Poche. We'll see. Again, Finnegan back. Do you like right now how the bullpen is shaping up?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, you always have more depth. You want more depth than you have. Look at Eduardo Salazar, who was a waiver claim 2 times last year from the Dodgers to Seattle to the Nationals. And finished very strongly. He's looked very, very good this spring. I think he has a real good chance to be in the bullpen again for the Nationals. Orlando Rivalta made 4 appearances late last year. He's looked very good this spring. You know, so there's definitely a little bit more depth to call on if they have to dip down, or how they put this bullpen together. And then Poche is on a minor league invite right now. He's on the 40-man roster, but I believe he will be the second lefty in the bullpen with Ferrer, who has looked terrific this spring, just as good as he looked the second half of last year after coming back from that teres major lat-type injury that kept him out through the All-Star break last year. And I agree with you. When you're throwing 98 to 100 from the left side, you have a breaking ball and a changeup you can show, that's big-time stuff for a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, and Davey basically wasn't all that coy about it yesterday. You know, when Grant and Danny were asking him right after the game yesterday, I heard this and I paid particular attention. You know, if there's two lefties coming up in the ninth inning, say, you know, Harper and Schwarber or whatever, you know, you might see Ferrer as the closer as opposed to Finnegan, depending, you know, matchup dependent and all that stuff. But you might see that earlier than later, basically, was what I took from Davey yesterday. Let me ask you this. C.J. Abrams obviously had the incident late last year, but everybody says he rededicated himself. He looks great. He started off great last year, again, hit a bump, got hot again in June, and then really kind of was up and down the rest of the way. What is the most important thing for C.J.? Again, is it physical? Is it mental? What do you think? Is it just maturity? What do you think?
I think it's all of that. Yeah. I think, you know, last year's first year is, he's a full-time major league shortstop in the big leagues. When you think about it, or the job's handed to him and it's his, and to play at a high level over a course of 162 games doesn't happen for everybody the first time through. And I think, you know, the how you deal with the frustrating times, the down times, is what turns you in to an all-star performer. When you can try and minimize the slumps and try and be as consistent as you can and not take that when those downtimes are having the plate, not take that into the field. And I think the second half of the year, you know, all of it kind of took a downturn for him. He struggled at the plate. He struggled more in the field. And hopefully, you know, is, you know, the interesting thing is something I learned yesterday talking with Mike Rizzo. All of the former Nationals who've come down as guest instructors this year, and, you know, he drew on a story that Drew Storen told minor leaguers, one that Ian Desmond told guys on the big league clubhouse. Both of them did. It's more important that they told you about how they got through the times where they really struggled than telling you about the times they succeeded, because yeah, everyone feels good when they succeed, you know, when they're going well. But, you know, how did they get through it? What did they feel like? How did they get through it? And what did they learn from it? And that was like the price of admission, worth the price of admission in bringing them down, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
For young guys, young players, to hear guys who had established big leaguers who had careers, who had good careers. And so that's the key for somebody like C.J. Abrams. You can hear it all the time from your coaches who are with you every day. It's kind of like, you know, you're the dad trying to tell your kids and they don't want to listen to you, and then somebody else comes along that they respect and tells them that, hey, they just told me the same thing you told me, and now it's worth gold to them.
Right. The voice, one of the voices, I should say, of the Washington Nationals, Charlie Slows, along with Dave Jagler. They'll be together on the radio tonight, right here on the Team 980, 6 o'clock, following Craig Hoffman. Nationals, Houston Astros in West Palm Beach before the ball club comes up north for next week against the Orioles, preseason action, or spring training action, I should say, exhibition baseball, and then the opener late next week. So before we get into James Wood and Dylan Cruz, and obviously everybody wants to know how they're looking, from your perspective, Charlie, I've heard a lot of bitching and kvetching all offseason about how, you know, team didn't spend money, this, that, and the other thing. And again, you can dice up and carve up the numbers, but I will say this, to me, and this could be me just being a little bit of a blind homer, I like some of the additions. Paul DeJong hit 24 home runs last year. Nathaniel Lowe, Gold Glove, and has pop. Obviously adding Josh Bell back. I kind of like what some of the moves that they've made that didn't cost them a ton of money, but have added to this major league roster. What say you?
I would have to agree with you on all of those things. Under whatever budget Mike Rizzo had to work with, I think he's, you know, somewhat of a magician. Even if you look at the Kyle Finnegan situation, mm-hmm, and you say, well, maybe he played poker by non-tendering him, but then, you know, getting him back on a more manageable one-year deal than what arbitration would have been, well, I would say he played a pretty good hand there. And all of the signings, you know, when you look at Josh Bell, 1 year for $6 million, Nathaniel Lowe at this point, what he's earning, Soroka, whom the Nationals signed for $9 million as,
right,
a starter. Other teams had a lot of interest in him, maybe both as a starter and a reliever, but he wanted to start and was more assured that coming to the Nationals that would be how the season would start for him. And he's elated to be here, and he's looked very good this spring. So I think, you know, the club improves. And then when you take the young players, if they start to move up, and I think James Wood is going to be a beast. I mean, the sky's the limit. I don't know how this year is going to be for him, but it's going to be good. And for Dylan Cruz, who's only had 5 weeks in the big leagues, it'll be still a learning curve for him, but we see a lot from him. If this team's defense is better, K-Bert Ruiz has dropped 18 pounds, is more disciplined in what he swings at the plate, and is better defensively. I mean, and you stay healthy because injuries are factors we see all around baseball right now, all around sports, really. If you stay healthy, guys have the kind of years you hope they have, and some exceed, then I think this team's going to be better.
Yeah,
How much better remains to be seen?
Right. No, and that's why you play the 162. I think you mentioned defensively. I think that's one area, and clearly they have to get more proficient running the bases and not making so many outs, and that's part of being aggressive. But I think defensively they have a chance to, you know, I don't want to say improve by leaps and bounds, but yeah, when you play solid defense, you can keep yourself in a bunch of games, right? And if you look right across the board, I mean, again, mentioned Lowe. Obviously, we know Dylan Cruz was tremendous in center field at LSU, of course, playing right. Jacob Young, I had him on the show last week. He's awesome. You know, who knows what's going to happen with Hassel and whatnot. But, I mean, like, defensively, they've got a chance here.
Yeah, defensively they were better in the first half of the year and really fell off in the second half of the year last year. DeYoung has looked great at third, and he was a shortstop his whole career until he was traded to Kansas City at the deadline last year and played third base for them. If he's the everyday third baseman, your defense has improved. If he shares time with Jose Tena, Tena's going to have to be better than he was from what we saw last year. And third base is a new position for him. He's really more of a second baseman who's played some shortstop, and before that trade really hadn't played much of third base at all in the minor leagues with Cleveland. But, you know, Garcia's much better now at second base than – I mean, look at him last year. He wasn't assured of the job in spring training and was pushed by Trey Lipscomb, who hit over 400 for the spring. And then Garcia went out and had a year where he was runner-up for a Silver Slugger Award and is much improved defensively. So, you know, again, this is a guy, when he's disciplined at what he swings at, he can hit the ball foul pole to foul pole, line drives, and for power. So, I mean, he's growing up now. I mean, when the Nationals first brought him up in 2020, he was 19 years old. They were bereft of talent in the minor leagues. He definitely wasn't ready to be there, but he was force-fed to the major leagues.
Charlie Slows with us for another moment or two. Again, join him and Dave Jagler tonight, 6 o'clock, right here on the Team 980, Astros National Spring Training Baseball. James Wood and obviously Dylan Cruz getting so much of the buzz and the hype, and we saw both of them obviously here last year, Wood for longer. I was talking with Jim Bowden yesterday. He was mentioning that Mike Rizzo didn't compare James Wood to Daryl Strawberry, but mentioned that in some similarities. James Wood, when you get to watch him out, obviously as you did the second half of last year or the last couple of months of last year, what does he remind you of, Charlie? Or who?
That's an interesting one. You mentioned Daryl Strawberry. The ball comes off his bat and sounds a lot like a young Daryl Strawberry. You know, if you look at more recent comparisons and you see these massive home runs the opposite way, it reminds you of Juan Soto. You think not too far back. Soto.
You're right. He does hit a lot of opposite field home runs. Excellent point.
They're all opposite field. He's hardly hit any to the right of center field so far in his time in the big leagues. All of the home runs I've seen this so far in spring training have been the other way. So massive power. And everybody in the organization, you got a lot of guys that are hitting the ball the other way that are learning how to do that. You'll pull the ball if you can learn to hit the other way up the middle. You're going to be better for the long run than a guy who tries to pull everything. So, I mean, that's the approach they want everybody to have.
No doubt about it. All right. You're coming up for opening day next week. Obviously, the Orioles before that. You've been at this a long time. Do you have a different sense of excitement this year than certainly I would assume the last, if we're being real, the last 3 or 4 years where the expectations were so low? Or does it feel like, I've done this so many damn times, every opening day is special and it's okay, and there's no different feeling for one Charlie Slows?
No, I mean, I get excited when we get to opening day. I don't give a lot of value to what you see early in spring training because pitchers are not in regular season shape. So, you know, when we see it for real, it's a different story when the adrenaline's flowing and you're in the big league ballparks. You know, I think a lot of what you said about the moves that the Nationals made, maybe certainly under the radar moves that maybe didn't move a needle a whole lot. But when you talk to people with other clubs, whether it's scouts, whether it's coaches, and they see the talent that the Nationals have in their organization now, we're looking at, you know, Andrew Pinckney and Dalen Lyle, and you mentioned Robert Hassel. That's your second outfield behind what you're seeing now. And that's a lot of talent coming. I mean,
Susana on the way as well.
Yeah, right. Susana's a ways off, but you know, at 20 years of age and having not been above A ball, but you know, you get excited. You see the way Brad Lord is picked.
Yes.
And you see some of the other, you know, young position players. When you look at Caden Wallace that they got in the Hunter Harvey trade from Kansas City, and he can play second and third, and the ball comes off his bat with a loud sound. Nassim Nunez basically was redshirted last year until he got to play the final week of the season when C.J. Abrams got optioned. I mean, worked his tail off last year, worked his tail off all winter, and he's hitting line drives all over the place. His swing looks a whole lot better. Really difficult to do what he did as a Rule 5 player last year and basically sit the entire year, be an occasional pinch runner and only start if Abrams was sick or hurt. But this guy can really play. He's a Gold Glove caliber big league shortstop right now, and so that gives you great depth. It remains to be seen whether he makes the club. I mean, Ahmed Rosario is going to be your guy you can plug in at second, short, third, and can play all three outfield positions, even first base if you needed him to go over there. And is Juan Yepes going to make the club as a right-handed bat off the bench? Alex Call, who had a great month when he came up after the Nationals traded Lane Thomas before he got hurt, has really refined his swing. He gives you speed and great defense off the bench. And the Nats are pretty much left-handed heavy, so they want right-handed bats off the bench. But, you know, you're weighing, does Nunez need to play every day? Yes. But with his speed, does he help you if you have him as a backup? Yes. So I think he's going to get a chance to go play every day at AAA, but if there's a need, they'll bring him up at some point.
Charlie, I've kept you far too long, but I appreciate you making some great time for us. Looking forward to the call tonight and looking forward to hearing all of the action starting next Thursday against the Phillies. And again, summer and baseball. And I know, you know, it's not going to be the same without Pete. And, you know, our hearts are still mending from that. But can't wait to hear you guys behind the mic for each and every game and bringing us all the Nationals baseball action. Thanks so much for doing this.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. Yeah, we're certainly still not over Pete yet, and he will be missed this year for sure.
Absolutely. Have a great call tonight. Charlie Slows, one of the voices of the Washington Nationals, nice enough to join us here on the Team 980. Make sure you listen to him and Dave tonight, starting at 6 o'clock against the Astros from West Palm Beach. All right, we'll get back into the NCAA tournament. We'll also get some Commander stuff. The Great Eight is playing tonight here in Washington, kicking off a homestand for the Capitals and inching ever closer. And I see my guy Toby Altizer back from West Palm Beach as well. We might have to bring him back aboard here. Try it. Listen, I mean, there's more than one radio show that talks about the Nationals. There aren't, you know? I mean, we talk about the Nationals all the time. Jim Bowden yesterday, Jacob Young last week. I mean, Charlie today, the game tonight. Believe it or not, there's more than one radio show that loves the Nationals and loves talking baseball. And it's this one on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Mac, did I really say that? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did.
Yep.
That was in response to the Dodo Brain, who said I had an incredibly stupid take for saying that Maryland's loss in the Big Ten semifinal really didn't mean a whole lot. And maybe it meant that they were a 4 seed instead of a 3 seed. Maybe it meant that they were in Seattle instead of Providence. Maybe. We don't know that for sure. They could have very well been that either way, being that the seeding process doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And again, it's at the very minimum, very subjective, and maybe at its worst, random. That's the college basketball story. We're also, if you wanted to chime in on something we talked about in hour number one, you know, again, I told you I grew up in a hotbed of college hoops, St. John's, Syracuse, Georgetown, Villanova, Big East. And yet I find myself, you know, and I've never been a bigger college basketball fan than baseball, NFL, hockey, probably even the NBA. But I find myself waning even more in interest. And not letting the madness of March completely colorblind me. We also just talked to Charlie Slows, the voice of the Nationals. Great conversation if you missed it. Podcasted after the show at the Team 980 on Odyssey, on the Odyssey app, I should say, or at theteam980.com. Or you can go check it out on Rewind. Great conversation, about 20 minutes or so. Good stuff with Charlie. He'll be on the call tonight for the Nats and the Astros. Opening day, a week and 9 days from right now. Next Thursday afternoon, 4:05 against Harper, Schwarbs, Trey, and the Philadelphia Phillies. So you have that. And then there's this, real quickly. Where did the Commanders grade in free agency, according to a major publication? You might be surprised to hear where and why. Next, on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app, after a trending alert. All right, yes, indeed. We mentioned the Commanders. They made it official with Nick Ballor today, bringing back their special teams ace on a contract, reported to be a 2-year deal. Also introduced Laremy Tunsil yesterday, and he said he is very much looking forward, of course, to working with Jaden Daniels as the Commanders continue to tune up their roster. We will have some discussion on just what that major publication graded the Commanders out to be. Today, after 15 years, Brandon Graham of the Philadelphia Eagles officially, as expected, retired. The Eagles also adding Azeez Ojulari from the New York Giants, an oft-injured but very talented free agent pass rusher. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers still out there. There was reports over the weekend that he wanted to be with the Minnesota Vikings, might retire. Now Cam Hayward of the Pittsburgh Steelers said on his podcast that that he's just getting tired of talking about Aaron Rodgers. He said, I just want to play football. I'm tired of talking about the quarterback situation. I'd rather have it done. I don't know what ends up happening. I'm ready to move on in free agency. There's too much going on. Okay. I mean, that's basically the process there. Tonight, the first four in Dayton, Ohio, St. Francis of Pennsylvania, under 500, despite winning their conference tournament against Alabama State, first up at 6:40, and tonight the nightcap at 9:10 or thereabouts. North Carolina and San Diego State. Should be a good one and an interesting night of college hoops ahead. American Mount St. Mary's tomorrow, of course, Maryland, right here on the Team 980 Friday afternoon and 4:30, and that's what's trending. All right, before we get to that Commander's grade that you might be a little surprised and pleased about by a national publication, I mentioned during the trending alert, Azeez Ojulari becomes the latest New York Giant to migrate down 95, down the Jersey Turnpike to Philadelphia, and to sign with the Philadelphia Eagles. That's right. Azeez Ojulari joins Adoree Jackson. There was another linebacker who I'm forgetting the name of. Patrick Johnson. That's who it was. Adoree Jackson. Of course, Saquon Barkley last year.
Yeah.
And now Ojulari. Mm-hmm. Now, the Eagles lost Josh Sweat, Milton Williams, and Brandon Graham, who we just mentioned during the trending alert, officially retired, as expected. So, AMAC, you're a Giants guy.
Mm-hmm.
Ojulari has been very productive when he plays and when he's on the field.
Yeah.
This is, let's be careful. This is not a Saquon Barkley type situation, but why do I feel like this might come back to haunt the Giants besides the obvious? Because if the dude stays on the field, which is a huge if, he plays like 11 games a year, but he averages basically a half a sack a game on like throughout his career.
Yeah.
He's pretty damn good. So are you beat up about this or good riddance?
It's a lot that goes into it. For the price tag that they signed him for is the first thing I think about. I think it was $4 million, right?
Yeah.
So my mind goes to somebody who came in when both Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau were injured and played just as well, if not better in some instances, like had a 2 or 3 sack game in one of those times. Mm-hmm. Like he stepped up and played very well. You can't sign him for $4 million.
Yeah.
But then again, we have Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns.
Well, and that's obviously part of the reason why you don't. But to your point, right,
$4 million.
Guys get injured.
Yeah.
And he obviously – and maybe it's, well, wait a second. We're going to have this guy be our rotational edge rusher. And in case Brian Burns or Kayvon Thibodeau get injured – he's always injured.
Yeah.
So I do sort of understand.
And he got injured. Yeah. Ironically enough, he got injured filling in for injuries.
Right.
So.
And that's been kind of the rub is, like, he played 17 games in his rookie year and he had 8 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
He played 11 games last year. I think he had 6.5 sacks, whatever it is.
6, I believe. Yeah.
58% of the defensive snaps last year, 11 total appearances. He doesn't play enough. So you have to, to have him as the backup or the third juice edge rusher, and in case a starter, in case one of those two guys goes down, it's hard because, again, he hasn't shown an ability to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But what I fear for the Giants and what I fear now having to, of course, deal with from an Eagles perspective is, what if this dude stays healthy?
Mm.
Remember, they spent a lot of money. It's one of the rare mistakes Howie Roseman has made. They spent a lot of money on Bryce Huff last year from the Jets.
Yeah.
They signed him, I think, to a 3-year, like $54 million deal. He was terrible and non-existent. For them. And they lost again. So what they're telling you is, oh, man, we lost Brandon Graham. We lost Milton Williams, who is more of an interior guy, and Josh Sweat. We need somebody. We love the kind of talent and the juice this guy brings. We'll deal with him if he can only play, 11 or 12 games this year.
Yeah.
And that, when Howie Roseman's thinking that, even though, again, it makes sense, it scares the daylights out of me just from a Commander's perspective, from a Giants perspective, from an NFL perspective, because what if they keep this dude on the field? He could wind up with 12 sacks easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
And I think that's why it's like I said, it's a complex issue because, again, he was a backup for us. He goes to Philly for $4 million. You know, it could possibly work out for them, but it's just one of those things you have to see. But as a Giants fan, to answer your question, as a Giants fan, am I like tossing and turning about it? No.
Right.
Because at the end, we have other issues that we need to address. But we've seen players go over there in Philly and have, you know, standout careers, especially from the Giants.
And don't forget, not only did Barkley leave, but we talked about this late last week. I don't know if you were with us or not. I can't remember. Maybe it was Friday. Maybe it was after you were last here.
Xavier McKinney.
We talked about Xavier McKinney, like, who nobody really mentions. And all he did was go to Green Bay and have 9 interceptions. And it's not like he had never done anything with the Giants. So, again, they let Barkley and McKinney go. And, you know, now they had to bring in Paulson Adebo at corner because Deontay Banks sucks. And they had to bring in Javon Holland because they let Xavier McKinney go.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we had to fill. We still have a, you know, banged up or not as good of an offensive line. So we added depth there and some depth across the defensive tackle position. So, you know, it's one of those things like you're going to lose players. Hopefully that one doesn't come to bite us. But it'll be interesting to see. Do you think he'll Ojulari will start for the Eagles? I'd imagine so.
Not sure. I'd have to double check that, but they lost so much.
Yeah,
like I was mentioning. But here's the thing. Right now, the mojo, the whatever you want to call it, the karma, the juju, whatever you want to call it, is so bad in New York for Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. They might get away with this, but again, this might completely blow up in their face. And it seems to me, I could be wrong, Ojulari is either going to have 12 or 13 sacks, or he's not going to be like a 6-sack guy, you know, playing 16 games. I don't think he'll be in the middle, basically. I think he'll be high or low one way or the other. And if I had to bet, I would take high, because the Eagles are going to have the role for him. Like, to your point, they also lost one of their other linebackers, I forgot the kid's name. Oren Burke. They lost him in free agency. They brought back, obviously, Zach Bond. But they've lost some pieces, so he could very well start if he's healthy. Again, the reason why we're talking about this is because it's the Giants to the Eagles. We've seen this script play out, of course, before. It potentially weakens the Giants, yes, that's one thing. But it also potentially very much bolsters the Eagles after they suffered quite a few losses. Now, mention CBSSports.com. Or I should say, I mentioned a major publication that brought out free agency grades, right? We're a week and a half into this thing, and certainly everything is incomplete, but they gave the Commanders an A-plus grade, saying, quote, this is exactly in capital letters across the board, how you build around a franchise quarterback who is still on his rookie contract. The Commanders, fresh off a trip to the NFC Championship, have made several splashes in the early stages of the free agent cycle. First, they kept their core intact by bringing Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz. Meanwhile, they made massive trades, landing Deebo Samuel and Laremy Tunsil, which we all know. And they brought back a bunch of their core, but also lost De'Ami Brown and and Jeremy Chinn and Jonathan Allen and so on and so and Dante Fowler. I mean, it's not like the Commanders have not lost anybody. Now, have they lost anybody that's backbreaking killer? Again, it depends on how you what your perspective. I mean, you say, well, got a lot to make up for a 10.5 sacks. I would have loved for them to be in the Ozzie Ojulari, business. They still need edge off the help off the edge. I would love if they brought in mentioned this name a number of times last week, Za'Darius Smith. They haven't yet. Nobody has yet. But the Commanders got an A plus grade from CBSSports.com. The Cowboys got a C minus. It said Dallas has gone bargain bin diving for low-cost former first-round picks. They've taken 1 or 2 year flyers on the following first-round picks: Peyton Turner, Solomon Thomas, Kair Elam, and that was the trade from the Bills, and Kenneth Murray. They brought in Javonte Williams as well. They inked Kevontae Turpin long-term. They lost the little running back. I forgot his name. Last week, my brain is just overloaded with information. But the point being is, I don't think Dallas. I will say this: losing Cooper Rush might be the biggest affection that they've had. Like, they lost to Marcus Lawrence, right? Let him go to Seattle. They still haven't signed Micah Parsons long term. That might cost them $41+ million per year. Dak Prescott is coming off of the season-ending injury that cost him half the year. They lost Zach Martin on the offensive line to retirement. I actually don't think the Cowboys have had a terrible offseason. I don't think it's been great by any stretch, but I don't think it's been terrible. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think losing Cooper Rush to Baltimore yesterday is a pretty significant deal when you consider that Dak Prescott's coming off of a major injury. He's been hurt a bunch in his career. He's had two injury-shortened seasons. Not like, oh, he missed a game or two at the end of the year. I'm talking about more than half the year. In the last, 4 years? 5 years? I think losing Cooper Rush was a pretty big loss for the Cowboys. And a nice signing for Baltimore, even though he doesn't fit into the scheme. You could do a lot worse than Cooper Rush as your quarterback. And if you're a smart football coach and an adaptable team, you can build a game plan around. But I actually like, sort of, the approach of the Cowboys. It's quiet. It's understated. It's not, like, big and flashy and splashy. You can't when you have big money deals to Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and obviously, we assume Micah Parsons coming up. This is the problem, guys. When you have superstar talent and you have to pay superstar price tags, like, everybody just said, oh, you can do whatever you want with the cap. No. Maybe from time to time you can play salary cap gymnastics. Eventually it causes you to nickel and dime ham and egg. And that's exactly what the Cowboys are having to do. Because they mortgaged and remortgaged and cut and all this stuff. This is the problem. It's also why I kind of like, again, like CBSSports.com, like the Commanders' approach for the most part, outside of some of the big splash trades that they've made, and they've made three in the last couple of months, and hopefully they all work out at some point. But the smaller moves that they made, the Dietrich Wises, the Jonathan Jones, all of that, so important because they don't cost you a lot of money. They don't cost you a lot of money and a lot of term.
So just to go back to the Cowboys, you said you like their...
I kind of like. Okay. I don't want to be like, oh, I love the Cowboys. No. I kind of like. I understand what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. They brought in Miles Sanders. I forgot to mention him. right? So now you got Miles Sanders and Javonte Williams as a tag team as your running back. Brought back Kevontae Turpin. I kind of like what the Cowboys have done.
And I think we touched on this before. I think you have to game plan ahead for, like, these upcoming contracts, like with a Dak or with a Micah CD.
Yeah.
Like, if either you're going to say, we're getting a deal done with these guys, like, let's get them done early so we save ourselves some money, which they haven't done.
They have not done.
They didn't do that
by,
with CD.
By waiting on Dak, that cost them about $6 or $7 million per year.
And the thing, like Josh Allen just got paid too, for a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So that's another ordeal. But I think
By waiting for Micah, it's cost them already $6 or $7 million per year easily. By Garrett getting the surprise contract extension.
Yes.
We'll see about Trey Hendrickson. I mean, the price tag right now for Micah Parsons has to be around $41-ish million a year.
At the floor right now.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be my critique with the Cowboys. It's like, if it just happened with CD, okay. Dak, maybe I can excuse it. Why isn't this Micah Parsons deal getting done? And then we also don't see them kind of, okay, we don't know if we can get Micah's deal done. Let's get an edge rush. Let's do something to kind of offset the cost of not getting this deal done in a timely fashion. That's my only concern or critique with the Dallas Cowboys.
That is AMAC, more than reasonable. I'm not saying I like everything that they've done. I'm not saying I like how they run their organization. I just feel like buy low and probably get a higher return. Like, if you think about it, last year, Dante Fowler signed a one-year, what, $3 million deal, $3.5 million deal. They got 10.5. It doesn't always work out that way, but I'm a buy low, try and get high juice in return kind of guy. On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app, we continue along right here as we approach the final hour of power. Stay with us, 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.